All right, welcome to Hawk Podcast. Today we're giving you some bonus content talking about common industry terms. If you're new to the industry and you've been hearing some terms thrown around and you don't know what they mean, we're going to try and address those today. If you've been enjoying the Data Center Fundamentals course we've been doing, feel free to subscribe to our YouTube channel or get the content delivered to you in email from our blog. You can sign up there. Also, check out datacenterhawk.com for market info, facility information, and ability to search the data center market. All right, David, so today we're taking a slight break from our companion series to our Data Center Fundamentals blog content.
Yes.
And we're doing some bonus content on common data center industry terms. So these are things that you've probably heard. If you're new to the industry, you've probably heard thrown around.
Yes.
And you may not know what they mean, and you don't want to look like an idiot. This content is for you. So we're going to start with some very rudimentary terms, starting with the most common term of our industry, KW. K-dubs, as some people will call them.
Yes, that's
You've probably heard K-dubs.
We're gonna, yes.
And I think it'll be helpful to give people the proper and slang term for these.
Sure.
Because you probably hear the slang more often.
Sure, absolutely. And well, you've done both, so that works great. KW and K-dub. I think the other thing I would mention going into this is a lot of your understanding of this of these words is where you came, what industry you came out of, and where you're coming to the data center industry from.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, me personally, I came from the real estate industry, commercial real estate industry, but some people are coming from the technology space, some people are coming from the construction space. So all that say, you know, some of these might make sense if you're coming from, you know, the energy side of things. KW, you would understand that. But this is basically kilowatt. You know, this is the measure of energy that companies are leasing, and you know this art. What it really represents is that the data center industry is all about power, and you know it said right now. You know we hear quotes that you know the data center industry globally uses 3 to 5% of the world's electricity, which is a staggering stat when you think about it. But it all starts you know with that you know watt, kilowatt, megawatt, and then goes from there.
All right, so yeah, you mentioned megawatt. Let's talk about that one as well. And I think you got a funny story around
I do have a funny story. You know,
these terms are case sensitive, I think you learned
that's
at one
right,
point.
Yeah, so megawatt, you know, this is typically, like if you're in data center developments, you know, typically, you know, 10 years ago, a building that would house, you know, data center infrastructure would be anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 megawatts. Today, those buildings are now being built, you know, anywhere from 50 to 100 megawatts. You know, typically most companies that are data center developers will build have a price per megawatt. So typically that can be $8 to $10 million a megawatt that they're building over time. But this is how we measure the markets. You know, if you're in the real estate business and you were looking at the office market in Chicago, you might say this is a 100 million square foot office market. In the Chicago data center market, you would say it's a 326 megawatt market. So that is the metric that we use to measure the market, to understand how much demand and supply is being added, et cetera. When I was first starting out in the commercial real estate business, we were helping a data center development promote what they were doing. So I was in charge of making sure that the information got out to people, and in the process took that MW, capital MW, and accidentally took the capital case off of the M and made it a lowercase, which actually goes from megawatts, capital MW, to I think it's milliwatts.
Milliwatts, which is like watch the battery lowest, territory.
The lowest amount of energy yes. like you can come up with. And so I quickly was told by someone that was much smarter than me, obviously, that, hey, you just, you know, if people are paying attention to the you know the actual acronyms that are there, you've described now what is one of the lowest
sure.
you know amounts
and,
of energy,
and
which
I think,
was
again,
awesome.
Thinking of the extreme noob here, the confusion may come is that KW is lowercase K, capital W.
Yes.
Megawatt, uppercase M, uppercase W.
So there you go.
To get this straight, again, avoid looking like a noob.
Yeah, but I
with
think
our
but,
tips.
Yeah, but I think the takeaway too is like, This is the metric that is making everything happen in the data center space.
Yeah.
It is power. This industry is about utilizing power so that you can make the infrastructure run for businesses around the world. And And so if you're in the space and you're trying to understand how it's growing, it grows by power.
Yeah, and again, another point to think to mention is that a megawatt is 1,000 kilowatts.
Yes.
So that's helpful to understand just the ratios there. It's actually 1,024 if you're talking computer language, but everyone in the industry, I think, basically does it as 1,000.
Sure.
Fair enough. All right, so let's talk about how leases get executed in this space. And I think it's fair to mention, like, some of these concepts we've touched on in other podcasts. We're trying to condense just the terminology piece into this one pod.
Terms.
So people can go, terms.
Key terms.
Yes. T's and C's. All right, so let's talk about leasing for a second. So when someone says, hey, gross plus E,
yes,
what does that mean? And give me an example of what that would look like.
Yeah, so if you're in commercial real estate, you know, every office building has typically tenants in them, and these tenants or customers have leases that they sign for, and the structure of the lease, you know, determines how much money these companies are paying, basically. So in the traditional office market, you typically lease on most markets on an annual basis. So you have a price per square foot per year. So if you're a 10,000 square foot office tenant, you have a price that you pay per square foot per year. In the data center industry, you have a price per KW that you pay on a monthly basis. And that's the way a lot of these leases are set up. And so it's important for, you know, people that are just getting into the space to understand that these buildings are, you know, the value of the building is based on the leases that are done within them. And so these leases are done, again, reserving that KW infrastructure. And that gross plus E is a type of lease that is done that allows a customer just to pay one cost. So, you know, that can be anywhere from $100 a KW per month to $200 a KW per month in that scenario, that gross scenario. And then you would pay an electricity cost, which that plus E stands for the electricity that you use on top of that $100 or $200 per KW per month.
Yeah, you summarized it great. We were talking earlier. You said it's the right to access the infrastructure.
Sure.
That's what you're paying for.
Yes.
And then once you're in there and you actually utilize the infrastructure, yep, aka the power, then you pay for that, yes, power that you're using as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk about, like, what in contrast to that, like a triple net lease. What does that look like?
Yeah, so there are some companies big enough that would want to lease an entire building. In a real estate lease, there are operating expenses that get passed along to the tenant. So, you know, if a data center operator builds a building, and the rent of the building might be $100 per KW per month, but there are triple net expenses in there that are on top of that might be $30 a month. So their rate would be the $100 plus the $30 would be $130, and that's that gross plus E deal you talked about. If you break that out, your customer says, hey, I don't want to pay you, data center operator, to do that $30 per KW per month. I want to do that myself because we as a company have people that do that. We think we can do it better. And so that is the need. That would be the need for like a triple net type of lease. And so that is where those companies either want to see those expenses broken out, or they want to complete those expenses themselves. And so they would prefer a lease structure like that as opposed to the one that I described earlier.
Okay. So now I've got some, call it grab baggy potpourri type terms.
Oh gosh. Yes.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
All right. So someone says this is a carrier neutral facility. What does that mean?
Yes. That just means that there's different fiber providers that come into the building. It's not just one fiber provider. 10, 15 years ago, the telecom industry, so think AT&T, Verizon, were building data centers, and they were saying, hey, come to this facility, but if you come to this facility, you need to use our fiber. That's what we do. That's what the service that we're offering here, the main service. And you saw a transition over time, but like companies were like, hey, we'll use your fiber, but we also have other fiber providers we have relationships with, or it makes sense for us to use. And so so carrier neutral really just describes, and most data centers,
I was going to say, is it fair to say that 99 plus percent of multi-tenant data centers built in the last 10 years are carrier neutral?
Yes, because you don't want to just be a data center that offers one fiber provider. So absolutely.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Next, one of your favorites, ping, power, and pipe. Break that down. I hear that a lot. Break it down for me.
That's one of those. If you're listening to this and you use that, you know, that's great. But it's one of those sayings I wish wasn't in the space, just because
it's a bit of a colo bro term.
Yeah. And so anyway, just you know, it's just the basics for like co-location. So you know, like what's the cost for ping, power, and pipe? Well, it's 100 KW plus, you know, whatever. It's just basically describing your basic, what you're paying for as a, you know, when you do a colocation deal. You know, that is the power, that is the connectivity. It's just the basics of the deal that I would say describes that.
Yes, another phrase I got here is power, space, and cooling.
Yes,
basically synonymous terms.
Yeah,
it's the basic. It's basically the least you can pay for.
Yeah,
and then anything on top of that, which we're going to get into in a second.
Yes.
What you mentioned, connectivity is part of that, but I think connectivity is typically a separate charge.
Sure.
Or any of the managed services we're going to get into in a second. So, dovetail, segue, managed services. What are people typically referring to when they say that?
Yeah, there's just additional things that you might want a data center operator to provide other than power, space, and cooling. So, you know, this might be like firewall management. It has more to do with your like the actual infrastructure itself. Or, you know, your applications that you're putting into the space and what they might need from a technology standpoint. So, you know, what we've seen over time is, you know, most of the data center industry that we track plays in the power, space, and cooling. Hey, we're going to provide the basics. And then there's, you know, additional managed services that you can get, but you'll get from the other vendors. You know, there are some within the colocation industry that we track that do provide, you know, additional managed services on top of that, on top of just the basics. But it just depends on who you're partnering with.
Yeah, I think you can see certain providers put more emphasis on this specific offering than others.
Yes.
And like you said, it could be very wide. It can be anywhere from like literally unplugging something and plugging it into something else. It's the most simplistic phase, remote hands type, or like I said, moving in and out servers and doing the software installs, like something that's pretty technical stuff.
And if you're a small company, you can imagine that you go, hey, we don't have people that do that like at our company. We need help. And so a lot of times it's easier just to have that data center operator that is doing that work for you anyway. You know, add that on top. You know, whereas if you're a Fortune 500 company, there's a good chance that you have a network team that handles specific, you know, issues related to, you know, your firewall or whatever that might be. So it really depends on like company type and probably the philosophy around how the company utilizes and spends money internally to build those people that would do that work.
Yeah, I think the value proposition I've heard a lot is that, you know, especially if you're geographically removed, you're going to pay a network technician to drive 3 hours from your home office to the data center, do 15 minutes worth of work, drive 3 hours back.
Yeah.
We'll just pay the data center company to have their guy walk over there and do whatever you're going to do. So,
you bet.
All right, another fun term, rack and stack.
What does that mean?
What does that even mean, David?
That is a great question. So, you know, this is something that you can ask data center operators to do for you, which is typically if gear gets delivered to the data center that you're trying to stand up within your environment. You can have that company put that gear together for you and actually like take it out to the data center floor. And, you know, that is to your point you just described. Instead of sending that engineer out to do that, you know, as a company, you can have the data center operator do that. So, and, I think as, you know, if you're new to this industry, data center IT infrastructure is something that companies want to control, you know, that you want to control. In the past, people have wanted to control as much of that as they could. Over time, that has shifted. People have gotten more comfortable with, okay, these data center operators, they really know what they're doing. They actually have people on their teams that can help us do this, and it's more efficient. Or we might even pay more, but we just get it done faster. And so I think that has allowed things like racking and stacking and other things to happen more because companies have gotten more comfortable with outsourcing these requirements and services to the people that are helping them.
Yeah. And if you've been on a data center tour, you've probably seen like their receiving bay is typically full of boxes and it's millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment. I mean, it's insane. And the action of physically moving those and physically plugging them in is, you know, that's an effort. All right, let's talk data center construction. I have two terms for you, purpose-built and retrofit.
Oh, yeah.
What do those mean?
Yeah, so a lot of this describes the maturity of our industry. You know, basically, if we say that a data center building is purpose-built, that means, you know, from basically ground up, it was designed to be a data center building, data center facility. If we say that it's retrofit, typically what that means is it was either an office building or an industrial building. That's how it was built, intended. And then over time, someone thought, no, this is really close to power. It's really close to connectivity. It's in the right market. We should make this into a data center. And so that's the difference between purpose-built and retrofit. Typically now, purpose-built buildings are more cost-efficient. They're more energy efficient because of the way that they're being built today. Retrofit facilities, you know, typically are that they are built that way because the location really makes sense, and it doesn't make sense to actually scrape that and build something else. Most of the time today, we are seeing purpose-built facilities, and it just talks, just see the maturity of the industry. It's a lot easier to engineer something and design something to perform at its maximum level in a, you know, a two-story, four data hall, you know, design than looking at a building and trying to figure out how to, you know, take that design and cram it in. So that's the difference between purpose and purpose-built and retrofit.
All right. Next one, one of the major terms in our industry, absorption. Tell me about absorption and give me an example if you could.
Oh, I can. You know, absorption is the word that we use to measure demand in the data center industry. And it's actually a commercial real estate term that is, you know, we're trying to quarterly, every, you know, twice a year, annually, understand how much how many deals are being done in a market, you know, to show, hey, which market is being preferred by users over another, which area is being preferred. And so when a data center user, let's say there's a 2 megawatt requirement in a market, you know, in Northern California, and it's a company that wants to sign a, you know, a transaction with one of the data center operators during that time period, we will, you know, when we understand that gets done, that goes into kind of the demand bucket. And then we can tell the market, hey, you know, over this period of time, this much demand was done in this market. And so if you're a data center operator, data center investor, data center consultant, a vendor in the market, you're trying to understand where the action is happening. And so that absorption number in each market is a way to understand how growth is taking place over a period of time.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, the way we calculate that is the commission power that was added minus the available power that was added, right?
Sure.
So if you had somebody brings a new building online, yep, 10 megawatts, yep, and it's totally vacant, no absorption has happened,
yep,
no deals have been done. If you bring on 10 megawatts of building that's totally pre-leased, then the entire 10 megawatts,
yes,
has been leased. That's all absorption number.
Yeah. Yeah, and we do this when the deals are signed because we feel, yeah, like that's the best look at, you know, when those actions are happening that,
yeah,
really shows the true demand. You can track absorption when people move in, but that's a, yeah,
nobody
your
wants to do
your
that
face exactly. We should, yeah, do a slow-mo right there rather than Mike's face.
When it's signed. Ooh.
Yes. It's a all much right harder thing to track.
All right. Let's talk about fiber.
Oh, let's
good
do it,
for
man
your digestion. No, I'm just kidding. Dark fiber versus lit fiber. I know, I got dad
You're
jokes.
Father
I'm so sorry
of four. I did
I'm
think
so
of that.
Sorry.
That is a dad
so
joke,
sorry
bro.
I'm so sorry. I
it's okay.
Edit that out, right? All right, let's talk about dark fiber versus lit fiber. What's the difference between the two? How are those terms used? When are they applied?
Yeah, so dark fiber typically is just a, you know, an individual fiber route that is a direct contact between one facility and the other, and so it's typically more efficient. You know, lit fiber would be like if a fiber route is into a facility, you would say that's like on net or lit.
Yeah.
And you know, data center buildings typically will have a number of fiber providers there, and you know, with one fiber provider, they will typically enter the building in two different places from a redundancy standpoint. And you know, the most dense buildings from a fiber perspective are typically like carrier hotels, which we have a whole podcast dedicated to those somewhere in our,
like, we have two
podcasts,
maybe even three.
Have we done that many?
I know you did one dedicated. We did one together. I think we touched on it in like our types of data centers.
Oh my gosh, man.
Which just goes to underscore, even a double underscore, the,
yes,
importance of them as,
sure,
connectivity hubs.
Yes.
So just to quickly summarize, dark fiber is like a dedicated, and then lit is like a shared resource.
Sure.
Is that a good way to explain it?
Yep.
Okay. Next one, we've talked on this in some other pods as well, but here we are in consolidation mode, PUE. And not like I smell something gross. See, I can't help myself. I really can't help myself. I can't.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. you know, this is a PUE stands for, you know, power usage effectiveness. And this is a metric that data center facilities will use to measure the efficiency of the design. And the reason this is important if you're a data center user is because your cost that you pay is tied to, from an electricity standpoint, is tied to this metric. So you basically take the amount of power coming into the facility as a whole, and the amount of power that is, you know, on the raised floor, and you divide that and you get your power, your PUE metric.
So what is that number typically?
Yeah, so typically today, and like the developments are happening, it'll be anywhere from like 1.3 to 1.5. And you know, there's some groups that are even, you know, lower. 1.0 would be the perfect facility, which out there does not exist. But there are some like very big, sophisticated companies, you know, the cloud companies that are out there, the hyperscale companies that are designing facilities at, you know, just incredible PUE numbers because they like have a very scalable design, understand their loads very, I would say, well. Whereas, you know, if you're an enterprise user that does this once every 10 years, you don't, you know, you just don't have that great of an, as granular of an understanding. But data center operators today are really working hard to make sure that their PUEs are competitive because they understand that that is a metric that companies are going to pay for. So they're looking at the efficiency between, you know, different buildings. I will tell you that 5 to 10 years ago, I would say this was much more of a, there was much more of a delta between where some facilities were being built. And we've seen tremendous maturity in design, and that has created, you know, a much more efficient PUE number.
All right, last, let's talk about compliance acronyms.
Oh, man.
I know.
Oh, get excited.
ISO, PCI, SOC 1, near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
As they are mine.
Yes.
So let's talk about them.
So there's a whole world of, so compliance is a really important part of the data center industry. It has grown in importance because of, you know, things like data breaches and things like that. So if you're in a specific, if you're in the financial industry, there are compliances that your IT infrastructure and facility need to meet so that you can do what it is that you're doing within that space. You know, if you're in the healthcare industry, you will have HIPAA compliances that you have to, that your physical space and your, you know, server environment has to meet so that you can store the type of data that you're needing to store. We've talked about some of the federal compliance that data centers will need to have so that they can house, you know, government-related IT infrastructure environments. So with, you know, within these, there are acronyms that will just blow your mind, you know, as far as, I mean, there's just a long list of them.
You know, this reminds me of is that Chris Rock bit when he said, like, there's no casual hockey fans. He said hockey fans are like crack addicts.
There you
like,
go.
No one just kind of dabbles in crack.
Yes.
Either you never had it or you're totally addicted. Same way with hockey. Like, there's no casual hockey fans. You're either a diehard fanatic or you don't watch it all.
Okay.
So with the same way with these compliance acronyms, like, they're so specific and they're so exhaustive that the people who have a specific requirement, like, their facility has to be SOC 1, they know exactly what it means.
Sure.
They know that the door has to be 17.5 inches from the alarms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they've got it mastered. And they really don't care about anything else.
Sure. And that, which makes sense. I mean, the good news, I think, for the industry is that, you know, the data center operators that are out there typically have people on staff that can help navigate through what those compliances are. Not just do we have the compliance, but really understand the intricacies of what we need to do to make sure that we meet the compliance that you need to have.
Sure, but the point of there being a standard is that if a company has spent a lot of time and effort to understand what they actually need, like the bits and bytes, and they say, okay, that aligns with SOC 1, so then they in the data center can quickly, you know, relate or market themselves to that user to say, we are SOC 1. And all that implies, and there's been an independent agency who's validated that compliance, and so they can match up.
Yeah,
Without this company saying, we need these 400 things, and the company goes, I only got like 370 of those things and two that you don't. And they say, SOC 1 needed, SOC 1 met.
Yes.
Requirement matches need.
Yeah. All right. So, and I would say most data centers will meet to hit, or will work to hit, you know, the top 10 to 20 most important compliances. And then above that, you know, there'd probably be like a user by user basis to understand what they would need to do to get that compliance.
And again, most of these are some derivation of how secure is the building from a physical and virtual standpoint. You know, is there one guard or two guards? Is there one layer of security versus seven layers? That type of thing. Again, that's an oversimplification, but it all boils down to a handful of things and how far down the rabbit hole you've gone with those things.
Truth.
All right, since this is a bonus podcast, we're going to offer some bonus content on this bonus podcast.
Bonus content.
Yes. You know, people have dinged us on YouTube for having too much banter, which is fine. That's why we're putting it at the end. If you're an anti-banter, if you're an anti-bantite, you can just... Now's the time for you to check out. But if you want some bonus content, get to know your data center talk leader, David Liggett. This morning we did a 2K row in our CrossFit class.
Yes.
I want you to walk me through the mental states of David Liggett.
Okay.
In the 48 hours leading up to the 2K row, and then the however many long it took you. I won't spoil that part.
Oh, yeah.
And then the aftermath.
That'll be revealed at the end for the two people that stayed on listening.
John Day and somebody else.
So, you have a time.
I had a time.
In
to
the
beat,
past.
A TTB.
Yes, you have a time. I do not. So, I researched by asking you, kind of, maybe another person or two, what they had done in the past. And then I thought to my head this morning when we did, I would break it up into four segments, which I think is pretty common.
Yes,
and I'm going to
pause right there. So just, again,
yes.
Take the terms. 2K row means a 2,000-meter row on an indoor
rowing
device.
Yes.
Sir, that's what it means.
Yes. So I thought in my head how I would break it down, and my plan was to do the first three sets in a pretty consistent—
Three sets.
I'm sorry. First three 500
meters. So you took the 2,000 meters, broke down to four.
Yes.
500 meters. Very common approach.
Yes. So I took those three, and I said I will do these consistently. And then on round four, I'll give it everything I got.
You go for broke, yes.
And I would say first 500 felt pretty decent.
Give me like your pacing there.
I was about a 148 to 150.
Okay, so what overall time on the 2K were you shooting for?
I was wanted to get below 7:30, okay. 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, think if you did, you know, 2 minutes a segment, that'd be 8 minutes. So
yeah.
I was trying to pick up, you know, anywhere from whatever, 7 seconds-ish each.
Yeah.
Deal. So I did probably 148 to 150 pretty much all the way through. And then that last one I got into the, you know, I'd go like 145 would be my pace, and then it would jump up to 153, and I'd go, oh gosh, and then I'd go, you know, get it lower. So anyway, that's how I broke it down.
And you how are you feeling?
Yes, when I got off of the rower, I had a, I would say, hellish burn in my quads that took about 2 minutes to go away. So I just kind of sat there, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. You know, we know that we have some workouts.
It's a different kind of burn.
Yes.
It's very lactic-y. It's very, you've done like this same motion.
Yes.
Like your leg is the very repetitive motion.
Yeah. So we have some workouts that we will do where we fall down and I just kind of roll around and, you know.
We need to, Red, I'm going to get you a picture to flash up at the end of this podcast. That's probably similar to where you were at today.
Yes.
It's David laying on the ground.
No. So I would say it wasn't as bad.
Today wasn't as bad?
It wasn't the cardio that was killing me as much as it was the legs, which I think is pretty consistent
That's
with
true.
Others.
And yeah.
That's
why the rowing is such a great test, because it's
yes.
it's a strength and cardio at
yes.
the same time.
Yeah. So what was your mentality?
Same. So I think based on our conversations, my previous time, which was 3 years ago, was at 729.6.
Yes.
I had that notated because it's important.
And you said right before you
the decimal is important.
And he said right before he started, I just want to beat that by.
I want to beat that.
Point.
Yeah, I don't care how much, a fractional. So you can set on our rowers, you can just say, hey, I'm going to row 2,000 meters,
yes.
and it counts down for you.
Yes.
So that's how I mentally engage
yes.
with the machine.
It's good to know that.
And so it tells you what your projected finish projected finish will be based on what you're
yes.
currently rowing. So I just try to keep that number
yes.
just slightly below my best time to date.
Yes.
So first 500 meters, like 152. Then I started to slow down a little bit. It was like probably 154-ish in that second block. Reattained the pace. And then in the last 500, I dropped it down probably 149.
Yes.
And so I came in at 724. What was your final time?
717.
717.
Mikey,
that's
you're a very smooth rower. So that's
I
one
try
of the
to
differences
be.
Between you and me. Is
But apparently it didn't work because I was the slowest of our class.
Well, you know.
Slowness was for naught.
And I can't say the no. – sometimes, though, it you know pays to look better than the others. Might finish a little.
It's kind of like a lot of things. Like I don't have the strength or endurance of many others, present company included. False. So I've had to work really hard on technique. Well, that's where I'm going to get my advantages on the technique side. So it was hard. It was fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah, so we're doing like a whole benchmark series with our gym, which is I think is going to be cool.
Now that is a different, you know, I think I probably didn't go hard enough because I, the pain that we feel after certain things that we do in there, like I would agree with you. I kind of enjoyed that this morning, which is probably not how it's intended to be, you know?
Yeah.
Because most of the times we leave there, I enjoy the camaraderie. I enjoy the
sure,
but I don't enjoy.
I did feel like I mentally went pretty dark.
Yeah.
Today.
Yes.
That's good.
There we go.
I don't feel like I loafed it in any way. So
yes.
Anyways, that was exciting.
Well, there you go. So bonus
content and a bonus.
Gosh, man, this
podcast. This
podcast is just get more and more valuable over time.
All sorts of bonuses.
We might talk about cooking in the future, which would have to be.
I was going
to
say
you talking.
You're
about,
not going to talk about cooking. It'd
be you. It'd be me asking you.
I'd
questions
be happy to
about
talk
your
cooking or whittling or something.
Your smoker activity.
Yes.
Will you do any?
Okay, dude,
go ahead.
I will tease it right now. My wife got a new job. She's working for this woman who runs like an organic recipes and health website. And she gave us a recipe, and it was like Mongolian beef.
Yes.
I kid you not. It tasted nearly as good, if not better, than Pei Wei. It was so good.
Interesting.
And it was like gluten-free.
Well.
GF, baby.
Maybe the next time we're in here, we'll eat some of that.
Anyways.
Love it. Okay.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Check out, again, datacenterhawk.com for everything that we do from the market standpoint or able to search the market, search different facilities. Subscribe to this podcast here or on iTunes or wherever you get your content. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Boom.